You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? My daddy was a miner, and I'm a miner's son. He'll be with you fellow workers until this battle's won. Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on? Sing it! Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Oh, workers, can you stand it? Tell me how you can. Will you be a lousy scab or will you be a man? Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Tell me which side are you on? Which side are you on? Come all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell, of how the good old union has come in here to dwell. Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
And you're back to 3CR Community Radio. You are listening to Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence, a show about the cities and suburbs most of the time, sometimes we're off course, but most importantly about how we live in an atomized world. So we live in these little boxes, and there's a lot of various things that influence our society to create that, but these boxes, they create divisions, and they also create conditions for us materially in our circumstances that make life, everything we do sort of serve a very small minority of people on this planet who have lots and lots and lots of money. And of course, our urbanized, atomized world is hugely destructive for the environment. So that's the kill your lawn part. However, the Kill Your Lawn movement online tends to be focusing on your individual lawn, which is lovely. And, you know, I encourage you to try and plant sustainable and preferably indigenous species to help local wildlife and ecology. But without real organizing and structural change, it's a very individual approaches have their value, and I definitely will talk about them, but they also are quite limited in sort of bigger picture change. So I'm really sorry to say, but part three of the Minefield sort of, that's the documentary that I was going to feature excerpts from this week. Part three of the Fingerboards Mind Struggle will not be going to air today because I was up till midnight working on it, and then I thought I put it on my USB, and I have discovered that I have not. So we're going to sort of improvise a bit. And yeah, I would say though that there is a screening of the Minefield documentary. I haven't talked about the Minefield documentary yet, but it is a bone-chilling and terrifying documentary about mining in Victoria following the Fingerboards mine, following up to about 2023. This kicked off in 2014, the Fingerboards mine struggle. And it also shows the history and interviews rural communities affected by previous mines that of this nature, like this mineral sands mine proposed on the Mitchell River in Gippsland. And the shocking thing is that Victorian mining regulations and laws are some of the worst in the world. And actually, there are actually some better laws regarding to certain aspects of fighting mines in Western Australia, believe it or not, than in Victoria. And I think it's been a very illuminating thing, this documentary. So if you managed to see it at Catalyst the other week, you'll know what I'm talking about. But there are hundreds of sort of discarded mines across Victoria, or ongoing mines. Hundreds of mines across Victoria. Some are finished and some are still going. A lot of rare earth critical minerals type stuff. And rural communities have often been devastated by them. There's been issues with radiation left in rural townships, with dust blowing onto the townships. It's basically this untalked about thing in the broader Australian media that does not cover Victoria. So it is a brilliant documentary. It will probably give you a moment of grief just at how bad it is. And probably outrage that you don't fully understand the true extent of mining in Victoria, and its legacy and destruction. But it is great. And there's another screening of it coming up, being hosted by Socialist Alliance in Geelong on the 10th of October at 6 p.m. at Geelong Trades Hall. So you're all welcome to come to that. Mindfree Glenaledale, if you want to help the community that is resisting this, that's Mindfree Glenaledale. That's GLENALADALE.org. Yes, I think it's just .org. Otherwise it's .org.au. But I'm pretty sure it's .org. And yeah, so you can find out more on their website. There's heaps to learn there. And yeah, next week we'll talk about what I prepared for today, but not coming today, Gippsland Critical Minerals, which was formerly Calbar Operations. A little bit of a teaser about them. Calbar Operations is a company that has never done any mining projects before. They basically formed to do the Fingerboards mineral sands mine. And there's a lot of questionable things about the players behind Calbar Operations. But basically in 2021, this mine got defeated. It got temporarily defeated, I should say, not completely 100% defeated. The environmental minister at the time had the last say on the issue. The community response was very strong and very good. It was over 900 submissions from the community to the EES. The EES had 4 years to put together, which is the environmental effect statement, to put itself together and put this proposal together. And the community had 40 days to respond to it and shut it down. Now this was, they filled up an entire car boot of books and folders when they collected the environmental effect statements. So that's what Mindfree Glenaledale had to respond to and read through in 40 days in the middle of lockdowns, where they could not all talk to each other very effectively. So mining in Victoria is completely rigged in favor of the mining companies. And it's remarkable that they, at the time, managed to get the project shelved. The Environment Minister didn't also like that the, at the time, he didn't like that the train carrying the radioactive contaminated ore would be going past his home through Richmond to the port of Geelong. That was probably the final nail in the coffin. And so now Calabar Operations has rebranded into Gippsland Critical Minerals in 2023. It has the original CEO passed away, and then there was a much tougher veteran mining CEO for a while, and now there's a new CEO of Gippsland Critical Minerals, Michelle Wood, and a bit of a shuffling around. So some of the information in Minefield, I think, needs to be re-researched, as there's been some movement in Gippsland Critical Minerals, but it is essentially the same players. And so next week you're going to hear, oh sorry, not next week, next week is Transcreator Radio, another show you should listen to with the lovely Madison. But the following week, the next fortnight, I will be back with that third installment of Minefield. And then I think I have at least one more installment, which will be getting into the beautiful ecology and delicate ecosystems of Gippsland. Just a minute ago, if you caught the beginning of the show, you would have heard that I had a very interesting guest walk into the studio with me. And, you know, I just like to reintroduce my guest today from Uprise Radio. Are you also from Renegade Activists? Do you have that connection?
No, that's the previous host.
Okay, so, yeah. Okay, so Koshin. Hey, yes. Koshin.
Hello.
Welcome. Welcome to these troubled times.
Yeah.
The music I am playing underneath this is to welcome Koshin in as a glorious hero of our resistance to the world. This is Overtaken from the original One Piece soundtrack.
Incredible.
Yes, that was Overtaken from the legendary, never-ending anime and manga, One Piece, which seems to have become a bit of a symbol. It is a, it is Japanese anime. I forget that I love One Piece. I kind of don't like the author, to be honest, Oda. Anyway, but that's a whole other topic. Yeah, it's a bit of a flawed show at times. That's an understatement. But it has this whole theme of like revolution and sort of fighting a big bad world government. A lot of sort of connections to our times. So it's become a symbol in the Global South, I guess. It's the One Piece flag, which is the main character's pirate flag, has been popping up along Palestinian flags and in also recently in Nepal. Mm. Yeah, which has been quite a bit humorous and great.
Yeah, lots of flags in Nepal.
Yeah. So we've got a bit more time to chat now because I missed out on showing the lovely audience the Minefield documentary. I thought it'd be a good time to introduce our topic for today. We're going to go to I invited you in, Koshin, because you did this really good episode on productivity in response to Jim Chalmers, the Labor Treasurer Jim Chalmers, And you also read a book that he read that I do not want to read after you explained it. And so we're going to talk about that, and I'm going to relate it back to kicking fences in our sort of urbanized, atomized environments. But yeah, I guess loosely today we are talking about productivity and how it affects our lives. So I'm just going to play some 3CR community service announcements, and then we'll hear from the day after the 2025 federal election, just a little excerpt of Jim Chalmers talking a little bit on Insiders, the ABC show, about what his plans were economically for us here on The Stolen Wealth.
The fears are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white kafir to an array of modern designs, explore the range and order online or drop by 3CR during business hours. Wear your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to kafirs.org.au, that's kufiyas.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
They're pulling on the boots in Brazil and wiping off the eggshells in Moorabbin. Fascism's on the march, and we say, yeah, nah.
Yen Up Us Iran is a new weekly program on 3CR dedicated to tracking this rise in Australia, Aotearoa, and all around our increasingly warm little globe.
Every Thursday at 4:30 p.m, we'll be talking to writers and fighters about some angry blighters.
Well, I think one of the major differences we have between some of the commentary and how we see our own government is this is an ambitious government. You think about some of the changes we've made, you know, income tax cuts, some of the budget repair that we've done, the big investments in housing, the energy transformation, and particularly in healthcare. This is an ambitious government, and we're looking forward to implementing the agenda that we took to the election. Mm. To manage that uncertainty at the same time as we roll out our domestic agenda, Future Made in Australia, housing, energy, technology, human capital, competition policy.
The great difficulty you faced and the government faced in the first term was inflation and all of those interest rate rises. We saw one rate cut earlier this year. Yeah. Are you looking forward to, in the second term, seeing a few more rate cuts?
Look, I'm not going to count my chickens on that front. Certainly the market expects there to be a number of interest rate cuts. I don't make those sorts of predictions. We saw a rate cut in February, and I think that did have an impact on the way people see their prospects. Consumer confidence has actually started rebounding from the middle of last year. The tax cuts, petrol prices coming down, and then the interest rate cut has slowly rebuilt confidence off a very low base. And so if we do see more interest rate cuts over the course of the rest of the year, I think that will be a very helpful way to boost confidence in the economy, particularly consumer and sentiment, and also provide some cost of living relief for people.
Nearly every economist says productivity needs to be one of your top priorities as well. Is there more you can do to squeeze more productivity out of the economy?
Yes. And you know, I'm looking forward to rolling out the changes we announced on national regime for occupational licensing, the non-compete clauses change, the competition policy I'm working up with the states, reviving national competition policy, big priority for me as Treasurer. So there is an agenda there, but also don't forget, we commissioned from the Productivity Commission five big pieces of work on the main drivers, the main pillars of productivity in our economy. We'll receive that in the third quarter of this year. I'm looking forward to receiving that because we've got an agenda on productivity. But we can do more, and we will do more. And the best way to think about the difference between our first term and the second term that we won last night, first term was primarily inflation without forgetting productivity. The second term will be primarily productivity without forgetting inflation.
That's interesting. So the priority does shift now to productivity.
And a much broader sense of it. Yeah. You know, human capital, competition policy, technology, energy, the care economy. These are where we're going to find the productivity gains, and not quickly, but over the medium term.
And you're back. So that was Jim Chalmers chatting on Insiders following the day after the federal election victory, Labor's federal election victory. So just we're going to sort of start off with translating. You can go and listen to the full thing. It is up on ABC's YouTube channel. I would say that Jim Chalmers is exceptionally good, wouldn't you, Koshin, at either saying nothing or being quite technical in his language. So he is actually telling you some of what the plan is, but you actually don't really know what he means.
Yeah, it's a lot of, yeah, it's very techno jargon.
Yeah, it's not actually language that ordinary people can understand. So it's actually, for me, it's an issue of transparency with the way he actually talks.
Yeah.
And he's very good at it, which is disturbing.
Mm. Yeah.
Because he's actually talking about something that manages and has an effect on all our lives. Like when he said, when they were talking about the interest rates cuts coming, that's, you would think that that would be a good thing. Mm. But he talks about counting his chickens, and it sounds, and he's sort of not really taking any responsibility for interest. He's sort of saying, well, whatever the demands are, you know. And I love this in like when people in government talk about the economy, like it's some sort of magic ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Let's talk a little bit about what productivity is. And I think Insider's host there, sorry, I forget his name.
David Spears.
That's it, yeah. David Spears, yeah. Was sneaking in a little bit of a jab there with squeezing, the word squeezing.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting language.
Yeah. So basically, folks, Koshin, what's your take on what is productivity?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to understand productivity is just the output of labor. So, given X amount of time, how much can one worker produce? I think the big criticism in the Australian context is how it's really designed around like manufacturing as like that's the baseline for something like productivity.
Yeah.
But in Australia, where we have a service economy where most people's jobs aren't in manufacturing or you know, actually producing items, they're in teaching or healthcare, those sorts of fields, retail. The measuring efficiency then starts to look really strange. I mean, it's, you know, if you have one nurse per five patients, if that's your baseline of productivity, then to be more productive, you would want 50 patients per nurse. I mean, that on paper, that's, you know, that's a massive increase in productivity. But obviously on the ground, that's not what you want. You would actually, in that sort of field, productivity would be bad to the to the outcome.
And I think the important thing to remember is that word squeezing, that's the effect on everyday people is the squeezing. So, for example, in my workplace, work in maintenance, in gardening and landscaping, and slowly over time, the company has been investing more and more in more effective tracking and sort of basically these sort of clocking on devices that track our movements throughout the day, where we go, and we sort of report into whether we're taking a break, whether we're using the vehicle for personal use, or whether we're at a work site. And traditionally in my industry, you might have had an 8-hour job in the day, right? You smash it out, you get it done an hour and a half early. It was pretty common that if you smashed it out, the crew boss would be like, all right, go home. And well, if you work for a big company that on paper says that you have to work those 8 hours, now what you have is basically a system reporting on your movements and when you start and when you leave work. So what happens then is that you can't be the boss, say your boss is a middle manager type, they can't just say to they can't say to you anymore, all right, go home, you've done a good job today. Because their bosses are all being fed the information that you're getting at work. So what happens is it becomes another device to squeeze more hours and working time out of us. And so that's one of the things, because Jim Chalmers, in the five pillars, by the way, he mentioned the five pillars of the Productivity Commission that he commissioned. That is now out as of the 15th of September. Technology is a big part of that. Jim Chalmers is also very interested in AI technology. We might get back into that later. But Sometimes the language and the way we talk about productivity and these things, it's sometimes people tune out and sort of go, oh, I don't know what they're saying. But the important thing to remember is that you've all had an experience in a workplace where they just ask a little bit more. Mm. Something changes and you have to give more. You have to give more in your hours. It's no longer good enough that you're doing X. You now need to do X and Y. Mm. And then maybe a couple years later or a year later, suddenly you're doing X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
You said to your boss, oh, yeah, I love doing this. I'll take on that. Yeah, I'm always happy to do something. Never say that to your boss. Never. If you are scheduled, if you're in maintenance and you have a four-hour job, you take 4 hours to do that job. Don't tell them you did it in 2 hours. Because they will give you another four-hour job to get done in 2 hours.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I think that is important though. Like productivity has gone up every year. Mm. It's not that productivity is going down. It's not that we're producing less. It's that the market in the economy requires productivity to keep increasing. Yeah. So you do need to every year, everyone on the whole needs to be producing more and more and more. Mm. And it's
to produce that beautiful surplus.
Yeah, exactly.
That goes into the rubbish tips in the oceans.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, fills up our bins. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like this is not one of their long-term goals. It's not like productivity has to increase until 2050 and then we can relax. No. This is just forever. Yeah. We're just going to keep going up and up. The line's just going to keep going up and up forever.
Yeah. And I guess that's what the degrowth movement is, one of those movements that's emerged in response to this, is that it's that infinite growth on a finite planet. So there's lots of people popping up now to sort of challenge that and talk about maybe going in a different way.
Mm.
And I think we will leave some time a bit later to talk about maybe some imaginations we might have for alternative ways of doing things.
Mm.
But was there anything... I guess the other thing to mention is there's another... sometimes pops into these conversations that people have no idea what people are talking about is gross domestic product.
Mm. Yeah.
I would say that basically it is a measurement device used by those with all the wealth and money and the people who help them manage it, which are the politicians, to decide what they think is important and say, if those things are good, then that's a good economy.
Mm.
But often a lot of the things that don't get included into GDP are actually a lot of really important jobs, services, and environmental care.
Mm, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think the economy, like the measurements that we have for the economy, definitely don't measure some of the things that ordinary people would think would be the most important parts, the most important parts of our lives, don't factor in to any of those numbers.
Yeah, it's not about our needs.
Mm, definitely, yeah.
It's about
the needs of the market,
yeah,
which is...
profit-driven.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not getting that profit.
No, I mean, yeah, unless you own a business, you're not getting it. Like, yeah. that's the whole thing.
One of the things I've been following is the new suburbs that are getting built. So people might be familiar with them. There's a lot being built in the city of Hume. There's also a lot in Geelong. And just pretty much anywhere on the outskirts of Naarm. And one of the things people will notice when they go through these suburbs, there's a lot of things to take note. But I grew up in, I'll compare it to where I grew up in Sydney. Maybe you can throw in some examples yourself there, Koshin. In Sydney, where I grew up in the land of the Dragons and the Bulldogs in League, which is sort of Canterbury Council and St. George Dragons. And all the suburbs I grew up with had a little shopping strip and milk bars on corners. So these are older suburbs, post-baby boom suburbs. So these are still built, you know, for our capitalist world, et cetera, et cetera. But they were built for a world which was less monopoly and more small business, where public transport was valued a bit better. But then you step into these new suburbs, and it seems like late-stage capitalism. Because what you have is even bigger blocks of housing. Like, the quarter-acre block still exists, but I'm talking about the block in which, you know, 10 or 20 houses sit. It's now more like 20 or 40 houses sitting on these massive blocks with woeful bus networks. I mean, yeah, you do not want to be without a car. It is you're 100% dependent on a car in these new suburbs, unless you want to walk 20 minutes to your bus just to catch a bus to your local shopping district, and then walk 20 minutes from the bus stop to your shopping district. So there's no milk bars, there's no little intermediary businesses, so there's no small businesses sort of scattered throughout these suburbs. There are some people who are setting stuff up in their garages. some of the councils are already cracking that down on that, though. And what there is a one centralized shopping area that's sort of like the beginnings of what will probably become a bigger shopping mall. And they are pretty much housed with all the major monopolies. So you got your Macca's, your Subway, even if like you want your Chinese food or your like Japanese food, it'll be like Sushi or one of those larger franchises. And of course, it'll be one of the market duopolies in terms of supermarket duopolies. Mm. So what you have is actually a sort of even less community. So small business is often associated with a sort of more of like your community vibe. And, you know, I remember that. I remember the local butcher, the local fruit store and stuff like that. Everyone loved this guy in Kingsgrove, one of the suburbs I lived in, who made the best chorizo in town, you know. Everyone talked about his chorizo. But now you've just got Coles and Woolies and you don't have much else in terms of choice in these new suburbs. And so these suburbs to me are very interesting because the buildings as well, the places you live in, the houses you live in, are designed to for an atomized world. They're designed to basically make you rely on living in the house. They're not very much about going outdoors. They don't have any yards or anything like that. They've got like film rooms and all these sorts of things. So the atomized world they're driving you into is the online world where... this is one of the other points I'm driving to, is that is a leisure time. However, that leisure time is the place in which you are now putting hours like into Instagram or Netflix or something to yet again fill someone's pockets.
Yeah.
And so it's very interesting because we're talking about needs, right? And Jim Chalmers in that excerpt is talking about how he's going to build more housing. And all those housing developments use the word, we're about community.
Yeah.
These are private houses. There's no community housing or anything like that, even though that's shonky as well. But like this is this. So he's talking about building housing, that this is all part of the productivity gains, right? These productivity gains are going to benefit you and I, Koshin. We're going to get houses.
Yeah.
Never mind that these new houses still like, actually really unaffordable.
They're unaffordable. They're not built particularly well. I used to work as a removalist, so I used to move people out to those places, and they are dystopian. There's a surreal feeling when you go to them. And the designs are so strange. You'd see a lot of them would have like the walls of the houses would be, you know, like a couple of like 20 centimeters away from each other because they're designed sort of like a townhouse, but then they're scared to actually link the walls because they want to be able to sell it as, no, this is an individual building. You will own this building. You won't have to share a wall with anyone. And then, it's just it just creates these weird effects where it's there's these weird spaces between the houses that you can't do anything with. You can't even really walk down them. So you just end up with this dead space because it's just they're insisting that they will not share a wall. They will not be, one single building.
Yeah. And the other part to the grift that I've noticed with these new suburbs, and you might have noticed this too, so say you're going up the Hume Highway to the Hume City Council area. Don't go during peak hour down the Hume Highway, eh, Christian?
Yeah, it's wild.
But why? Why is this traffic just getting worse and worse year after year? Well, let's go back to the design of those suburbs. How many jobs are in 95% or more housing and then one little shopping center? What about jobs in health? Where are the doctors? You know?
Yeah, it's 100% residential. Like it's just for the people to live and then they're meant to come back into the city.
Exactly. So everyone is then funneling out. And this goes back to how suburbs were originally about. They were all dependent on car economies. So, of course, Mr. Chalmers, in his five pillars, he's talking about investing in cheaper, cleaner energy and the net zero transition. But you read a book that Chalmers likes.
Yeah, not just Chalmers, a lot of them. David Mookey, the New South Wales treasurer. There's someone else as well in the Labor government who made a speech called The Abundance Agenda, I think he called it. Mm. But yeah, the book is Abundance by Ezra Klein and Derek Thomas.
Ezra Klein, I'm not a fan of that man.
Not the best politics. Not the best, yeah.
Yeah, if you like, maybe read Naomi Klein. That's a better Klein. They're not related, but anyway. So what's this future that they're all dreaming of, Koshin?
The thing about the book is the basic premises aren't that bad. I mean, what they set up sound nice on paper. They talk about how we need to do more on climate and how to do that. We need to build more, green infrastructure. We need more renewable energies. But it's all the problems and hurdles that they imagine in the middle. And yeah, the vision of the future that they have is not a nice place.
No.
I mean, even in their utopian vision, it's this very atomized world of extremely decentralized, sort of everyone is their own node. Everyone is receiving packages delivered by Amazon, and it gets a little sci-fi with the they imagine that we're going to have labs in the sky in low Earth orbit producing pills for us.
Never mind that the low Earth orbit is currently filled with every nation on the planet's satellites crashing into each other.
It's I don't know. I mean, there is some company that wants to do something like that, but it does sound it doesn't sound like the kind of thing that I would be basing my vision of the future on. One tech startup, famously tech startups always work out.
And that's the thing. People thought with the Labour majority that Labour would finally break free of whatever was holding Labour back from being like you and I.
Mm.
But I think that what you'll find when you dig into a lot of the Labour politicians is that they don't see the same visions of the future that you and I do.
Mm.
And I am not shocked by how Labour has been since they won their majority.
Mm.
I was scared when I heard that Labour had that majority. Mm. And this is not, you're listening to 3CR Community Radio. If you've just randomly tuned in from somewhere, I am not about to sell you to go vote for the Liberal Party. God, no. I am a transgender woman. This is not happening, right? What I'm talking about is that Labour's grift. They're a big party of grifters.
Mm.
They're cashing in on their maybe more socially conscious history. They're cashing in on when they were a party of the union movement. Now they're a party that has basically destroyed the union movement and then taken charge of it. Like you see with the CFMEU's current struggle with the Labour administrator.
Mm.
Yet no charges still laid.
Strange. And then there was a report about how the developers are also, involved in organized crime, but I haven't seen Labour take any steps to put property developers into administration or nationalize them.
No, but they do consult them for housing.
Exactly.
They don't consult Rahu. They don't consult the Australia Institute. No, they do consult property developers. Yeah. No conflict of interest there.
Mm.
And in fact, many property developers have great illustrious careers in political parties and especially local councils. But anyway, no conflicts of interest there. We're going to go to just like a short little break, and then we'll be back with you. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM.
The Commons Social Change Library is an online collection of educational resources for those involved in community campaigns and social and labour movements. It collects, curates, and distributes key lessons and resources from progressive movements from around Australia and across the globe. The library includes over 1,400 resources covering campaign strategy, community organising, activist history, digital campaigning, justice, equity, diversity and inclusion, and much, much more. It's free to access the library, so check out the collection at www.commonslibrary.org.
Did you know that Western Sahara is Africa's last colony? The issue of Western Sahara was raised in the Eddie Mabo case referencing Terra Nullius. Western Sahara is illegally occupied by Morocco. Indigenous Sahrawis are denied their right to self-determination. France continues to veto United Nations human rights observation in Western Sahara. Sahrawi people are being killed by Israeli drones. Like to learn more? Become informed. Become an Australia Western Sahara Association member at awsa.org.au. Australian Western Sahara Association is a 3CR supporter.
And you're back listening to 3CR Community Radio, Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence, and we're kicking fences today. We're talking about productivity, and we're talking about how it is squeezing us. It is squeezing us. It's giving me back pain. It's just, oh, God, I'm so tired, Koshin. So I'm just going to talk a little bit more about these imaginations of labor, which to me, I think they view us caring about the environment, caring about people, as silly people who don't like modernity. What do you think?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways. I think they definitely envision themselves as, they always, you know, the words they use, they're always talking about how they're pragmatic, how they are responsible. They really see themselves as the only people who see, they're the mature people in the room. And when people start talking about the environment or, you know, community, these are sort of these fringe voices that are disconnected from the political reality and don't understand what's actually possible or what's actually good.
Meanwhile, the March for Australia people seem to have a lot of issues that are in common with a lot of people. It seems like all the divisions in our society are really benefiting a few, and hating on different ethnicities or trans people or whoever they're currently hating. It's like, yeah, it's just sort of like, maybe don't punch down and look up to Mr. Chalmers and his mates in Labor. I don't know. What do you reckon?
I think it's a good example of like their tactics. I mean, the way that they spoke afterwards was as if the only problem with those protests was that they didn't see that Labor was the responsible pick. They started talking about how they were slashing migration numbers. They've pushed through this legislation to to have these deportations to third countries.
Yeah, and they're talking about migration. The racists are talking about migration because they're feeling the housing crisis. Migration isn't driving the housing crisis. Our political classes, with their incredible investment portfolios and their mates in property development.
Yeah. Yeah, but they don't want to. It would be bad for them personally to point to that.
And going back to the ABC Insight as well, during the break, we were talking about how wild the Murdoch representation is in Insiders. And every week when you look at the panel of talking heads on Insiders, it is the people who control the media. The only thing I like about Insiders, I go to it to get news. The only thing I like about it is the cartoons. It's like the only bit that ever like actually maybe challenges the status quo. We're now going to spend the last 5 minutes or so imagining better worlds, because we need to present ideas. We have to present an alternative to this. We've talked about a lot of alternatives. And there's a lot of important things that need to happen, like, you know, overthrowing capitalism, decolonization, ending the colony. But maybe what is it to you to, it can be like simple daily things, or it could be something bigger and more systemic like that. What is it to you?
I think the most important thing I think would be a return to more physical community. I think technology is really contributing. I mean, this atomization of individuals was going on before this recent tech revolution, but it's really accelerated it to a point where it seems like yeah, we're just so spread out and so divided. And I don't know what it looks like to get away from that, but I do think that that would be the biggest thing in improving life for humanity would be, a rejection of social media and these things that feel they fill the hole of community. They make you feel like you're like scratching that itch, but it's not the same.
It creates further alienation. It's actually a way to alienate us within our own households is social media and technology. Get off Instagram. The only reason I'm on it is to get people to watch the listen to this show and then quit Instagram. If we go back to productivity surplus, right? Think back to school, right? I had a whole bunch of school bags over the course of school. A lot of them were made I think probably all of them, actually. I don't know if there's any school bag out there that isn't made in the Global South. Made in the Global South, not made to last long, huge, so many issues with labor practices and also the supply chain and environmental impact. And they're like, it's good, right? Because look how many billions of bags we can make each year and make profit off and everything like that. Well, I don't know. What if someone just spent the time to make me one really good bag and they lived down the road from me and that bag lasted years?
Yeah. Yeah.
What if I was just going out today and all I needed was a basket to carry a few shopping items that was woven out of locally grown indigenous grasses and shrubs that would last me maybe a couple of years or so, and then if it deteriorated, it could be repaired or put back into nature to break down. And why do I
it's not very productive.
We need to
grow it. Why buy one school bag when you could buy one school bag every 6 months?
And so do you think there's like this threat that's implied if we don't be productive?
Yeah, I mean, because we have fully embraced capitalism and all of its logic, the political class has basically said that what's bad for the capitalist class is bad for everyone.
Yeah.
So if you don't feed into like the eternal growth, then when we are subject to the contractions of the economy, it's that there's no vision for anything different or larger. There's no vision of going beyond capitalism. Until we can really envision that and really move for that, and the political class is always going to be stuck in that logic.
Yeah.
And so they're going to be scared to do anything that doesn't go in the interests of capital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time, but it's been great having you. You've got a good mind.
Thanks.
Yeah. How can people tune in to Uprise Radio here on 3CR Radical Radio?
Yeah. So it's on Wednesdays, the 1st and 3rd and 5th Wednesday of the month at 5:30 p.m. It's called Uprise Radio. And you can also get the previous episodes from the 3CR website.
Amazing. Awesome. Okay. Thanks, folks, for listening. You've been listening to 3CR Cool on 855 AM 3CR. You can listen back to this and more at 3cr.org.au/killyourlawn. You can also follow me on Instagram at 3cr_kill_your_lawn. Next week we will get the more of the fingerboards mind struggle back. Apologies for that technical issue. Stay tuned for Think Again. This is One Piece again. This is from the original soundtrack. This is Mother Sea. Thank you.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.